Jones, he married Mabel, a wise old owl was he. He told his wife he never drank a stronger thing than tea. But after honeymooning, at night he stayed away. And for a week he never got home till the break of day. At last poor Mabel asked the reason why. Said Jones, I'm going to tell the truth or die. Baby dear, listen here, I'm afraid.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast. But a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the topic game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and Mellow Pony, a pop-up show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
Ooh! I do believe you mean to address me as Marquise Weirdington Esquire.
Oh, man.
The etymological definition of the Marquis is the baron or lord of the mark of the edge region, and so I present you with myself as a literal edge lord.
God, man, are you just gonna get shriller with every like new title?
Because eventually, by the end of the book, I will be like, I will be inaudible to all but dogs.
Oh God! Yeah, you'll just. It's yeah. That's what happened with the. That's what happened with Stygius the Bat Pony. They're not.
They're just too fancy. It's not that they're. It's not that they're shrieking at each other in ultra high frequency like bats. It has nothing to do with their bat qualities. It's just that they're too fancy to be.
They're so looking down their own snoots that they're like, "Pish posh! I refuse to speak in an audible decibel amongst these commoners." oh man! All right, hi folks.
Speaking of previous events in the podcast, I guess that. It's up to me to recap, but I can't remember anything except for a few highlights, because it was one of another, like, hanging out episode.
Yeah, it's another hurry up and wait episode, basically.
So in this one, Blackjack fully manifests her orb powers. And is now able to literally become orb, is able to separate memories out of people's heads. And we use this to like do some flashbacks directly related to components of Rampage. Because Rampage has a weird, dumb existential crisis, which is incredibly weird and dumb. Isn't she 200 years old? Like, why is like, yeah, I wonder, like, yeah, I think the thing that I keep settling on is the character is one of the many concepts for a Rampage that I would prefer to, like, see implemented is the, like, incredibly old monster.
I've been here, done that, seen the world.
I mean, I kind of like the idea of, like, somebody who's, like, been doing, like, shonen nonsense bullshit for, like, 200 years and is now over it, like, so, like, she should be over this, like, she should be, like, have long ago come to grips
with,
like,
yeah, like, well, I mean, but it's
in its own way be kind of a joke,
like, it, kind of like a running it's gag. It's surely established in the book that she's literally never dealt with up to now. She's been completely in the dark about this whole, like, yeah, no, I know, I'm just saying, like, the reason why that isn't the case is very stupid, as is with all things. It's just She just literally has never even thought to deal with this up until now.
Don't worry, Rampage. A better version of you lives in our hearts.
Yes.
so there's that. We find out that the goddess is apparently slowly converting Blackjack into a vessel. Mm-hmm. Or is at least declared her intention to do as much, in kind of a kinky bonded situation, like literally, or like I vaguely remarked on it last week, or maybe it was just after the cast I talked about it, but it straight up reminds me of a lot of like hypno fiction of like Ha ha ha, you're in this compromised position and you can't tell anybody. Even yes. though, like, yeah, like, it's, you're secretly naked in front of everybody and you can't tell them about it.
Yes.
And also, Zodiac, who I have been in the past and continue to derisively refer to as Zordon, because she's techno-wizard living in a tube. And also, every character I hate, I refuse to get their name right.
Yeah, that's fair.
Except for, like, Blackjack, who, like, I just can't land on a consistent...
The community likes to refer to her as Blowjob, but I, like, refuse that name because
yeah,
it's awful.
Yeah, that's even worse.
But just letting you know it's out there, like, you know, yeah. like, lowest common denominator, like, mocking term for her is Blowjob.
Right. I mean, once she becomes a noodle horse again. Oh, Robert Cop. We'll settle on Robert Cop for a little while, I guess. No. she has nicknames whenever it's appropriate to whoever her character is in a given scene.
I was
going to
say, like, I like RoboCop, so she's more like the goofy mecha that couldn't climb stairs.
Oh, the Ed 209?
Yeah.
Speaking of the Ed 209, after the podcast, we had some gold that really should have been recorded, which was, we were talking about, I sort of dropped the ball on explaining why I think the implications of the phrase "trade will save the waste" coming back is gross, and that's because we've seen what Sombra's conception of trade will save the waste is in the past, and that is defined in the form of the character of Charity, who is a hideously rapacious. Caricature of a capitalist, of a mercantilist, who does not make any sense in her, like, supposedly grim, dark, ultra-serious context. Because without at least giving her, like, some sort of pony Ed 209 to, like, loom over her and all of her dealings. Like, I'm just imagining, like, any post-apocalypse character ever, like, even a nice one. Like, take, like, like, imagine Pony Max Rokitansky walking into Charity's shop and, like, looking around and picking up a bunch of stuff he needs to survive the next 30 days. Mm-hmm. And she says, 20,000 bottle caps, please. What the fuck do you think, like, Mad Max is going to do in that context?
Yes.
He's at his most charitable, he will, like, toss as many bottle caps as he thinks the stuff is worth and walk out. Whereas, like, anybody even remotely less heroic than that would be more likely to pay her with a single bullet deposited directly into her brain pan.
Yes, that is quite true.
But yeah, no, like, a incredibly cruel, self-serving, greedy monster. Like, more of those is what we need to bring about
change in the waste, like true lasting change in the waste, apparently.
And so, like, yeah, just the nature of, like, how Charity is capable of, like, perpetuating her whole deal, I guess, is, like, symptomatic of how Riverside is now apparently a
bastion. I want to make a particular example of Flank. Like, Flank is a hilarious case of this, where, like, Flank is, like, the super libertarian dreamscape, in that, like, it completely runs on drugs and free love, and, like, nobody hurts anybody else for a really long time. But then, like, it also is propped up by, like, having to, like, be run by gangs, and then, like, later a security force that then turns on everyone. Which is just really funny to me when you think about it for, like, a half second. Like, that's your free market right there. Like,
We implemented the Night Watchman state. It stepped on everyone's necks. Whoops.
Yep, and now we're just a bunch of evil gangers because fuck it. And it's just, again, the thing you keep saying, which is, like, chuds can't help but tell on themselves. Like, I think this is meant to be, like, to come across as, again, Flank being punished for the sin of being drug addicts. but it really just comes across as like, no, BJ really ruined everything. She like armed the militia and they turned on their free love society immediately. They put the boot down literally immediately and ousted their big leader. And now they're just a drug raiding party that is just a bunch of like evil raiders, and they don't matter anymore.
So speaking of Blackjack making everything worse by getting involved, that's the final thing I recall about last week's chapter, which was we do this extended fable, I guess, about the dangers of trying to like be a good person and how that is ultimately a destructive impulse. Wherein like Blackjack almost drowns in shit trying to like save somebody from like dying in a disaster involving a septic tank or something. And like the moral of that is that like you shouldn't like that it is morally wrong to try to save people.
Yeah.
Which really like are
attempted sorry, the attempted theme is supposed to be that it's the at the cost of yourself. Like, give a self-destructive impulse to do good isn't an honorable trait, which is something I can kind of grok, but we're being this lesson is being reverberated through the worst character imaginable for this in the form of Charity. Charity is an ultra-capitalist. What does she give a shit if BJ offs herself trying to save a child? Like, outside of the fact that the Crusaders are all ultra-nihilists and, like, caring at all was her first mistake. That was her big sin, was that she cared at all to try and help.
Which goes back to, I think the chapter before, wherein, like, we sort of hit upon, like, the moral landscape of the story, like, the core, like, themes, the main drumbeat of the core recurring themes, which are that, like, there are certain aristos, there are certain special, great, ponies of history, who are objectively the true and proper leaders, but also, like, I'm gonna rescind, like, last time I said, but also they shouldn't do anything, but it turns out in this one, like, I'm now convinced that no, the only thing they should do is kill. their sole purpose is purging the unworthy. Anything other than that is immoral and destructive. Like they can't, they cannot and should not use their power to try to like ablate suffering. They shouldn't like try to like materially improve conditions for anybody. The only their only purpose is to purge the unworthy, to destroy political enemies who stand in the way of some vague good.
I have a good sense of what it is. It's liberal moderacy. I think is what like is being trying to be upheld here. Like a thing that like really stuck with me that's kind of come up time and time again about this story is like a core theme of the story is you're supposed to care about people. But not too much. Not at the risk of yourself. That would be crazy. You're only supposed to care. You're supposed to care of them like your neighbors, but not like your family. You're supposed to be like, well, I would save you if it didn't hurt me, which is just like not empathy or compassion. It's cowardice and the least I could do. But you need to believe that you're still a good person. So it's making excuses for your moderate centralist nature. And that, I think that's just what's on display here is just like, yeah, there are innate people who are destined to run the world. And the reason why we keep hitting the weird, like, moral wasteland of this setting is because, like, you're not supposed to care too much, I think is the, like, takeaway. Because that would be self-destructive and therefore like damaging, which is like almost a message I could potentially like understand, but I think like I don't want to get in this too much, but I think that like I think treating things like that as universalisms and truthisms is a very dangerous road to go down, because then you start building a like overly narrow definition of your like ability to empathize with others, and that allows you to commit regular cruelty by making the argument that you should, if you were to care too much about this, it would be destructive to yourself, and therefore you're exempt from like having compassion over that particular figure, which I think is just a bad way to look at like helping people.
Yeah. Pretty gross. So, did I miss anything that you can recall?
Also, Dawn showed up at the very end of the chapter.
Okay, yeah, we end with a cliffhanger of Mom, founder of the Hooftwaffen.
Oh, she's not the founder of the Hooftwaffen. She like, yeah, that was something I tried to address last week, and I think I need to like, because Dawn is like only showed up in very passing mention. And her backstory is kind of confusing, so I think it'd be like a really good time to do a very short crash course before we drop to this week's chapter. So Dawn was she was a surfacer. She was a, because that can happen every once in a while, is you can get a Pegasus who just like ended up being born to non-Pegasus parents. That just happens. So she was a surfacer who like cared a lot about things and was like really like a very like actively charitable person. And like attracted a bunch of like weirdos around her, all wanted to like do better because of her, which ended up becoming the companions, which ended up being the like people who kind of run all the factions of the setting. There's a sort of irony of the story in which that it presents itself as if these were good people who became bad, but we kind of learned in their backstories that all of them were hilariously bad, and Sombra just doesn't get that. But Dawn specifically wasn't like that. She was just like wanted to help people, and then she met a Pegasus who like fell out of the sky after killing a dragon, which was Glory's dad, and he whisked her away up into the sky, and then she got like fed up with how fashy and evil society was up in the clouds, and she like actively like campaigned and rallied to try and change things in Thunderhead, and when she hit the wall of bureaucracy, she just got fed up and left, and that's what like, and she's just been gone for like a huge number of years after that. So she actually like never had anything to do with the Hooftwaffen, the Sky Nazis, outside of like marrying one, which is like not great. I don't know. I can respect her being like,
I don't know. I'm pretty amused by like winged Nazi general being brought to Earth after like fighting a dragon. Which is the most, like, fucking alt-right metal band concept I can...
Yeah, he's very deliberately meant to invoke the image of that, like... I don't remember his name, but he was the, like... he was the Nazi general that was, like... Who lost an eye and a bunch of his fingers, and he just, like, decided he wanted to assassinate Hitler. And, like, he's very deliberately designed to invoke that character... because you're supposed to be like, you're supposed to think that like better of Sky Strikers specifically than your typical like Enclave pony, but we don't because they're Nazis, but like that's...
Oh, okay. So he was a good Nazi who like, if only he had, completed conducting, a bizarro Night of Long Knives, everything would have been fine. The Nazism in itself, not so bad, but, like, if we could only get rid of bad actors like that Hitler fellow.
Well, no, there was, like, an actual, like, it's an actual historical...
I know he existed, yeah. But, like, I know it's an actual person who actually existed, but the, like, significance of that dude's myth, like, why he, like, I'm making extremely... sardonic and mean-spirited assumptions about the appeal of his historical character.
I'm just letting you know what I'm letting the audience know what the deliberate aesthetics that they're trying to be invoked here. Skyscraper is supposed to be a not bad Nazi, even though the concept of a not bad Nazi is paradoxical and fucking go find another podcast or you think otherwise. In this case, that's just kind of where we have to be mentally to, like, be able to tolerate his character and presence. Dawn, on the other hand, is a lot more blameless, like, because she's at least bulwarked by, we're bulwarked of thinking ill of her by knowledge that she at least really, really, really tried. It just happens to be that Thunderhead is deeply neoliberal and doesn't actually care about, like, improving things. They just want the status quo to not get worse. So she fell on pretty deaf ears. So I don't know. I'm very defensive, and I'm really trying to, like, strong, like, Iron Man Dawn, because I like her as a character, and we're gonna get into why as we talk more in the next couple of chapters.
All right. So let's get started.
Yeah, let's get started. 20 minutes
nearly
in.
25 minutes in. Yeah.
It's become our regular thing of our pod, is that we always spend like 20 minutes deliberating on, like, the pod itself. And, like, before we even
we've become the meme. The local podcast starts discussing reviewing previous episode of podcast.
Well, I like the other one, which is like, podcast now has now become 3 hours of completely in jokes. But yeah, anyways, so chapter 51, A Good Day. As usual, it's got I've given it a fun subtitle. This one is, oops, Dawn barely appears in this chapter. So what was the point of this cliffhanger? So yeah, we start off, like, right into the previous scene where, like, Dawn is there, and, like, I was very confused about, like, the geography of this scene, but as far as I can understand, like, Blackjack and Glory are in their room, but with the door open, looking into the kitchen, talking to it's either, like, a kitchen or, like, a breakfast nook, and it's 21 and Dawn are having a fun conversation. I think it's also important to describe Dawn, because I think her design is hilarious to me. She is, like, an anime mom, because she has, like, everything about the way she's described, she's, like, doesn't open her eyes, and she talks very softly, and has, like, the anime mom hair, so, like, she's just pony anime mom.
Ara, I guess.
Yes, she's got the big ara energy. So they're having a fun conversation, and because the last chapter ended with her, like, asking, like, oh, where's my daughter Glory? I wanted to see her. You apparently know her. And Blackjack's like, she's away, because, like, she doesn't want, like, because, again, Glory is still Rainbow Dash. So they all just kind of do the, like, make up a dumb, like, they do that thing where all of them kind of try to add more to the story to explain where the hell Glory is right now.
Oh, I must have misheard. I thought that last chapter ended with her, like, having tea with Glory.
No, she was having tea with 21. Yeah, I was very confused. Like, again, I was also very confused about the geography of the scene between these two chapters. It's very confusing. So you're not alone in this. Like, I read the damn thing, and I'm like, where is everybody? But yeah, and then they kind of just close the door on the two having tea, and then just go back to talking. And then, like, Dawn just disappears, more or less. She just sort of, like, wanders off.
What? This is... How is everyone in the story that stupid? This person, like, knows the cabal of landowners who, like, control the entire set, like, is directly connected with them. The same people who have, like, installed a LoJack in our protagonist's cyborg brain, and like, surely knows some of the greater mysteries of the setting that hopefully we'll get around to, like, being curious about at all. And we just, like, close the door and walk, like, oh, well, that was true. It's neat that that happened.
Bye.
it's oh, so I'm gonna be upfront with this. I think that a lot of the reason why this that happened is because Sombra wrote a check his butt couldn't cash in the previous chapter by setting up this cliffhanger, and then realized in this chapter that he wanted to get a bunch of shit out of the way first before coming back to Dawn, because the next chapter is a big climactic moment. So we got to do a bunch of shit first here before we start going into the next scene, because I think Sombra rightfully identified the fact that we don't know nor give a shit about Enclave politics, so we're going to have to learn a whole bunch of that before then we get to Thunderhead.
Fuck. Can't we use this character who's been there then?
Yes, but we need to know, we need to learn about current Enclave politics. Because the shit is about to hit the fan in the original story with the Enclave, so we need to learn a bunch of shit in this chat story to understand why that's happening. Which I'm going to get into a complaint about later. But first of all, how about some fucking conversation about how Blackjack is doing? So Blackjack and Glory have some conversations about, like, because, like, BJ's feeling woozy and she, like, checks her pep up, which can, like, identify, like, medical condition problems, and her, like, head's fucked up because apparently, like, memory orb magic isn't super good to just do without knowing how to do it. It apparently fucks with your head. So BJ's head is all bugged up, and Glory is like, okay, you need to actually learn how to do this magic. So this chapter is partly about her learning how to actually do this magic properly without doing damage to herself.
I don't care.
I know. You didn't have to read it.
Like, I don't... What the... This is not how stakes work. This is,
no.
Like, isn't this supposed to be an adventure action... Like, what?
It is sometimes.
Oh, fuck.
Again, this is another case of writing a check your butt couldn't cash. This whole book is about getting to Thunderhead, but realize that, like, oh, we can't just have, like, two chapters that get to Thunderhead and then end of the book. So there's a lot of fucking padding that has to happen before we get there. We haven't even gotten to the society, which is fucking... Get ready for that shit, Shest.
Okay, right. Now what? So what happens?
BJ, BJ is then going to read a beginner's guide for magic, because, again, BJ is super inept at magic. She's apparently never even read a beginner's book on how to do it. Keep in mind, this is a child who somehow managed to figure out how to, like, make bullets out of telekinesis.
I mean, this is the, I mean, of course she can, like, create telekinetic bullets. She, like, she is an agent of death. And so, of course, she would be able to intuitively create mind bullets. The bullets are in her heart. and so by extension, like, I don't see why we couldn't just, she's an orb addict. She has been to the orb space twice. She is suffused with orb.
She has been to the great orb cosmos. She should be filled to the brim with memory magic at this point.
She should be, like, sort of a D&D sort, like, just intuitively a masterclass orb mancer.
All right, well, get
but
ready
she's
for
not so fucking.
Get ready for a secondary gear shift right into stop, because we get into another basically memory orb again that just sort of happens. I don't really, right. Like, see, I think that they go to bed, I think is what happens, like, BJ gets some rest and goes to sleep. You know, like you do in adventure stories.
Hold on, let's dedicate, like, three paragraphs to, like, one of the characters having to, like, they need to poop, and they need to have to find a bathroom, and...
That happens in this book.
They're almost out of toilet paper.
But yeah, we have a big, long story about Psalm, which is one of the Macintosh's marauders. She was the weird sniper who's really religious and, like, hates killing people, but got really good at it. We learn about her shitty, dumb, stupid backstory where she was, like, an orphan, and she was best friends with a boy named Cheddar. She waited the longest to get adopted. And it's this big sad moment where it doesn't look like she's going to get adopted. But then she does get adopted. And it was Golden Blood that adopted her. She was his adopted kid this whole time. But he's like awkward about it, so he doesn't want to be called dad. So he's like, call me teacher instead, which led into this whole thing about like Golden Blood having all of these kids that refer to him as teacher because it's like a weird like parenting parallel. None of this matters.
Except to be faintly creepy.
Yeah, it's a little uncomfortable. Also, Psalm sucks, and I hate her. Not as much as Golden Blood, but I don't like Psalm very much either.
Well, we hate Golden Blood because he is the author. Like, he's...
Yeah. And by extension, Psalm is the author's surrogate daughter? I don't like that very much. But yeah, BJ then has like a conversation with Lacuna. Because Lacuna is the closest thing they have to a memory magic like expert in the area, which is just a bunch of dumb wank. Like it's just talking about the idea that like BJ's like, well, I don't think I'm very good at magic, and Lacuna's like, actually, most people in the past weren't particularly good at magic and were usually only good at a couple of things. It was very rare for them to have an aptitude for magic with other sources, which means BJ is kind of special in a way she didn't know before. Hooray! There's also like a lot of reestablishing the way Lacuna works. Like not necessarily reestablishing, but there's more like emphasis being put on it because Lacuna's just getting a big spotlight for these next couple of chapters. Where like Lacuna, like BJ's like, oh hey, how are you doing? And Lacuna's like, I'm not doing anything. I'm incapable of doing things. I'm incapable of being happy. And like, it's the data problem. Like Lacuna has the data problem, which is like, she goes, I'm incapable of being happy. It's like, we've seen you be happy before. We know you're capable of doing it though. So like the writing doesn't work very well with what we're being told. And also just like her just nature of being a gestalt entity. She's very stern at BJ being like, about BJ insisting that she's really a person. Also, the goddess, like, mocks BJ because she's like, haha, I know that Lacuna did something to you, and you're going to hate her when you find out, but I'm not going to tell you because I think it's really funny. Okay. Which, like...
Thanks, Great Gazoo.
Well, like, I don't know.
Real important contributions here.
In a weird way, I kind of almost sort of empathize with the goddess, because, like, it's like one of those things where it's like, BJ, if you're not going to get this yet, like, there's no fucking hope for you. So I'm just kind of along for the ride. But yeah, we're just told that Lacuna did something bad, and there's kind of like an establishment that, like, all of her friends are hiding secrets from BJ and don't want to tell her.
Now, I'm mostly commenting on, like, oh, so, like, the goddess is just here now, is just sort of, like, a part of the cat, like, lingering and being a bitch, I'm sure there's other examples, but the only example of, like, an omnipotent, invisible bitch, sassy bitch that only the protagonist can see is the Great Gazoo, like, the late season... yeah. Addition to the Flintstones.
God, that's so good.
And in fact, the more I think about it, the more that like that's just what it is. Like that the fucking like he's like the Somers turned the goddess FOE's equivalent to the master into just Blackjack's personal Great Gazoo.
Flying up, he's like, "How's it going, Dum Dum?" Oh, there's a stupid gag about Glory making food, and she's like really bad at making food because like anime tropes are in full effect right now. But there's like a kind of goof thing where it's like she's like, what?
She's Rainbow Dash right now, so like I'm trying to imagine like she used to know how to cook, but now like she like can't figure it. Like all she's got is all right. I got you a Lunchable and a Capri Sun. Like, I'm trying to think of like
I put some protein powder in it.
Yeah, I poured a Capri Sun into like a protein powder mix, And that's the only thing I could figure out how to... Because I'm too Rainbow Dash right now.
In that moment, we are all too Rainbow Dash. But she makes, like, these goofy half-metal pancakes because BJ now needs to eat metal and gems to survive now as part of her diet. So, like, she makes pancakes that are, like, half pancakes but also have nails in them and stupid shit like that. It's a doofy running gag that I have, like, no real good or bad opinions about. It's just simply that's something in the story that we just have to contend with.
I don't know. I mean, I can't have a lot of context with it without being able to, like, read it myself. In a better world, it might be good as, like, we're falling back on, like, childlike world building to, like, contrast all the violence and despair and shit, which would be, like, good for, like, the overall, like,
mental health of the story
of the, like, the intended discordant themes of, like, the original FOE, but, like, I think it's just Somber being a baby. Like, just being
I think it's absolutely meant to be a joke,
make believe.
I think it's absolutely meant to be a joke. I just don't think it's particularly funny. It's something approaching a joke, but I don't think it's really a joke. But yeah, then they, like, decide what BJ is going to do today, and she's like, I'm gonna head to the collegiate to learn more about memory spells. And also decidedly never ask Zodiac about the whole reporting thing. So don't even bother assuming that they're also going to go do that.
Great. Okay, great.
She just, like, never... She hasn't put it together yet for some reason. Like, which is dumb. She doesn't even bother asking. Like, she doesn't even go, like, hey, all the people that, like, operate on me, did you put cameras in my head? No? Okay. How about you? Did you put a camera in my head? Like, she just doesn't do this. But yeah, she's gonna go learn about memory spells, and, like, the
we're
crew
like,
goes...
We've downgraded from, like, I was lamenting, like, a couple books ago or something, that, like, okay, reasonable decisions in a dumb world. But now we're downgraded all the way down to dumb decisions in a dumb world.
Yes.
It's a dumb world full of dumb people who do dumb things for no reason.
For dumb reasons. Soon it's just gonna be a base boosted one of us just saying dumb for half an hour. Like, just stretched out super long. But anyways, I don't know why the crew doesn't go with her with doing this, but they just don't. Like, 21 has a head cold, Scotch is currently rebuilding the town, but Rampage is being a baby, I guess. And just, like, being like, no, I don't want to go anywhere because my brain is all dumb and I don't know how to think about things. But Glory has no reason to not go with her outside of the fact that, like, Somber doesn't care about Glory at all and she's just been completely downgraded to the main character's girlfriend. And therefore she's lost, like, all agency from the story. Even though her mom just showed up and would have, like, a huge impact on the story. And this is also, like, a direct callback to the original story when, like, you know, in the last little bit, Calamity had a huge impact on the story because he was former Enclave. But, you know, fuck it, I guess, because all she's good for is spanking Blackjack when she's horny and sad. But fuck it.
We all need something like that now.
Yeah, but, like, I want her to do more things.
Yeah,
like,
no.
I don't agree with Glory's politics, but I hate the idea of like, a character being...
So... Does anybody besides
Lacuna
fast travel?
No, she's just on her own for no reason.
Wait, do we even bring along fast travel horse?
Yes, fast travel horse does come along. All
right.
I think part of this is
some consistency. Yeah.
I think she's supposed to be partly here for she's getting a spotlight, whatever. We find out that the book that BJ has was, of course, Twilight's Beginner's Guide on Magic, and has a little note where she was talking about resigning from her ministry to Luna, but then the bombs hit, so, you know, ironic echo and ironic juxtaposition shit there. And then we just, boop, we're in collegiate now. This happens within a paragraph, and was, let me tell you, was a massive bit of whiplash.
Hold on, before you go forward, I do have to say, like, I There's a better world in which Rampage being a dumb, obstinate baby is, like, in keeping with her, like, as a character who is, like, fully developed over it and, like, 200 years old. Wherein, like, I kind of want to see, like, an obstinate jerkhole Rampage who, like, hey, Rampage, want to come along with the thing? No, I'm too invested in this. And she's just playing cup and ball. Like, it's just like...
She's just stacking cards, yeah. No, you don't understand. This is taking literally all of my focus right now. But, you know, have fun, like, pretending to save the waste or whatever. And then just kind of waving them off.
And going back to very intensely, like, just playing cup and ball. And being real bad at it.
Yes. Not getting a single time. But yeah, they zoop to the collegiate so fast that I got whiplash from it happening. Because it just jumps into them having a conversation with Triage, who was the one of the various doctors in the story who should not be a doctor because they hate doing doctor things and they hate administering to patients and they have no bedside manner and should have been killed long ago by one of their patients because they're so mean. But Triage is there and she asks about memory spells and Triage like kind of gets her some pointers, I guess. Nothing really terribly important. They also banter about how BJ's cybernetics are super rad and keeping her really alive. And, like, this would have been a perfect opportunity for BJ to ask about the cameras.
Speaking of my cybernetics, there's been... there's something that's been playing up in there with a lot of hallucinations due to, like, inexplicable feedback from the cameras you installed!
You fucking assholes. Speaking of assholes... they also talk about how, like, the Collegiate is basically dying. Like, it's fallen apart completely because, like, the Harbingers keep pilfering their doctors. Because the Harbingers aren't bad to anybody besides BJ, as it turns out.
And also one of the core factions of the...
Yeah,
and
whatever.
Like, two of the core factions of the setting! They stomped all over the Finders who should have, like... the most accumulated capital to, like, issue retributive bounties on all of them. And they're also, like, fucking with, like, the second most technologically super advanced major faction in the setting. And yet, like, where the fuck are the Reapers? Like, isn't it their job to, like, keep the peace and, like, maintain control over the...
There is a nod to that with the Reapers later down the road, where they just say that, like, oh yeah, the Reapers are just toast. Like, the Reapers have more or less disbanded, and only the most loyal members are still really, like, keeping on with Big Daddy, because they're just... they've become such a joke of their former self, because they've just lost so much manpower. Throughout a war and also
still Ranger territory was the Reapers Afghanistan, I guess.
Yeah. Like they just collapsed against its hills.
They tested themselves against waiting for the bus or whatever the fuck that is that's taking. But yeah, they still going.
It's fine, I'll just edit it out.
But yeah, they tested themselves against anything. They tried to demonstrate an iota of power and were immediately destroyed by it.
Yes, they crashed against the rocks that was the Steel Rangers and died instantly.
Well, it seems like, based on what we were told by the story, what I can recall, it could have been anything. Like, the act of marshaling, the mere act of trying to marshal a demonstration of force was enough to destroy them. Like, they were so broken and disorganized in ways that I, like, keen-eyed listeners, give us some feedback. I vaguely recall I predicted precisely this.
Yeah,
like, everything
more or less.
I complained about the Reapers, like, in the way that are described, wouldn't they collapse immediately? And
yeah.
Then they did.
There is an awful amount of the times that I try to, like, defend this story from the perspective of knowledge we know at the time. But, like, yeah. They were always kind of doomed. I know the Reapers just, like, It's just Reapers are another casualty of what feels like a very waning attention span when it comes to Somber. Like, he just seems like he just gets bored of, like, big plot details after a while. Because it sets up the Reapers as being the significant force, so that's like, oh no, I don't care about those anymore. I want to play with the new action figures. I got a bunch
of new
toys.
Meanwhile, the Steel Rangers are like, I get, they seem to be depicted as remote, like they're in the far,
well,
like,
they're from the original
northeast
story.
Corner of the greater Hoofington metropolitan area, and so not even particularly invested in everything, even though they're like. Nominal founder or leader is part of this inner circle of like circle jerk buddies. Mm-hmm. I guess it falls on the society, whatever the fuck is their deal, to like try to like, but they're not like you would think they would then sweep across land and leverage their like control over everybody else's lack of food security.
Well, they're dealing with internal affairs is the reason why. Like, their king is dying, and like they're just split. Like, they're doing that thing that happens when a king dies, where like, okay, where does the land go? And like, trying to work all that shit out. So like, they're not capable of really manifesting,
advancing their own interests.
Yeah, they're not capable of like manifesting external power. I guess there's no one to take advantage of the food shortage, I guess. But Triage can fuck right off, because the next thing that she says is like, "Oh, I'm gonna go work for Red Eye, who is famously a slaver and the slave force in the story." And she's basically like, "Well, what else am I gonna do? Go work for the society? They're a bunch of jerks and also have slaves." And like. Fuck right off, just drop dead, Triage. Like, I fucking hate your guts.
Seriously, shoot this person. I think you've always been a dick. You're a bad doctor, and now you're gonna do like doctoring. You're gonna contribute your talents to a blight. And you're admitting this as much? Wait a minute, why? Why should I, speaking as Blackjack, why should I, Blackjack, hero of the waste, very concerned person, who evidently, whose only positive contribution they can add is killing people, allow you to do that, to walk out of here? Make the waste an even more terrible place.
I'm enforcing my own headcanon veto of this scene, and instead of Triage leaving the scene, Blackjack popped out her fingers on her horrible robot hand and pulled her entire skeleton out. Because fuck off. But the only other info we get dropped is that, like, the Harbingers, like, run by a prophet, and that prophet is maybe a Pegasus? So they're probably related to the Enclave in some way? And everyone just kind of goes like, oh, maybe. Because just nothing is known about the Harbingers, but it would go to explain a lot of why the Harbingers have showed up and have so much power. Is they're being like backed by like a significant external force that's trying to like make moves on the area, which is what the Enclave are doing. So it's not without reason. It's not without reason to believe such a thing. Cool. Then they decide they're gonna go to Skyport, which is where the like volunteer corps is still set up, handing out food samples to people, or food samples like food rations to people who are giving salvage. Because BJ also wants to go check it, what happened to Glory's sister. Because you remember, like a couple of chapters back, and like even a book back, BJ went on a bit of a rampage and like. Killed a bunch of Enclavers and like almost killed Glory's sister, so she's kind of wondering where she ended up. But yeah, on the way, a scene I can skip through really fast because it's just there to set up that the society is there. Is making moves. Is that they've started like press ganging people into like serfdom. Since they insist they don't take slaves, they instead sign contracts with serfs that have to work a certain amount of time before they're let go. But they're doing this at the end of a gun, because of course And the only really important part about this is Blackjack fights a Minotaur for a while named Pain Train, who just keeps yelling on Pain Train because wacky. Because we have to have some kind of fight, goddammit, because nothing has been happening these last two chapters.
It's time to roll onto the station, Pain Train.
I don't know. Like, I would like Pain Train more if I wasn't just so checked out on the society plotline. It would explain, like, okay, part of the reason why the society is big and dangerous is because, like, they have, like, access to, like, superior muscle than a lot of other factions do, because they can just pay for it, because, like, they are in effect, like, even though trade, you know, whatever, would save the waste and all that shit, like, the people who have all of the actual money is the society, because they have the food. Like, at the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter how much caps you got. If you can't feed people, it doesn't matter. So they actually, just by, like, existing, have...
They have actual wealth.
Yes. They have real, real wealth. As opposed to, like, the finder's piddly little crap. But anyways, BJ saves a bunch of people by beating up Minotaur.
In a world that made any sense with an author who knew anything about fucking shit, the finders would have, like, a huge stranglehold on everything by virtue of the distribution network. Like, that's usually the give and take between, like, merchant, like, that's like the feud capitalist. Like, that's the old, like, French left and right, like left wing and right wing. The right wing owns all the land and all the, like, raw material capital, and the left wing are the merchants who, like, have a control of the only way to, like, actually distribute any of that to make it in turn meaningful. That's the old school, like, etymological, like, origin of those terms. If this setting made any sense, the finders would still be, like, powerful because, this would only be a new turn of events because the finders managed to fuck up and collapse in on themselves, and the society, like, there'd be some mention the society is now building their own infrastructure of distribution, which is, you know, bad times, which means that, like, now they have all the chips, whereas,
yeah,
previously,
which I mean,
distribution
that
of power.
That is kind of happening. It's just that, like, this story just, like, doesn't really tell that story very well, because it's also a big dumb adventure.
Yeah, we have
where they're
to,
looking
like,
for MacGuffin.
Infer it. Because, yeah, anyway.
But yeah, anyways, they go to Skyport, and it's being swarmed by scavengers who are desperate for food, and find out that, like, the Pegasi are no longer accepting scrap for whatever reason. Like, trade has just been cut off. BJ uses the chaos of this situation to, like, muscle her way in, because she wants to go see the commander of the base, because she knows them personally. Because she was the girl she kidnapped and had little fun adventures for a while with. A lightning dancer. Anyways, they fucking swarm. God, I lost my place. Sorry, give me a moment. Okay. I'll just cut that out. Yeah. They have a conversation with Lightning Dancer about, like, apparently Dusk didn't end up there, and, like, shit's kind of starting to hit the wall because, there's talk of a lot of shit happening, and that, like, Thunderhead maybe has betrayed the Enclave, and that's probably going to fall apart, and we don't know what the hell's going on with that. And so, God, you people better be fucking grateful, because I'm about to cut out, like, fucking several pages of dry Enclave fucking politics. So, you know, they're having this conversation, and, like, a raptor flies down, which is just, like, it's basically a big sky tank. It's bigger than the Vertibucks. It's substantially more dangerous. It's a mid-tier ship or whatever. And it flies down, and a bunch of, like, commanders of, like, the Hoofwaffen show up to this area because they're, like, looking for something. The short answer of this is basically There's rumors that someone spotted Rainbow Dash down here, and they're worried about that because, like, if
Rainbow Dash... Symbol of hope! We can't allow that!
It's not even just that. There's also, like, a really complicated thing from the original story that requires, like... There's a very small genetic pool of people who can access basically a super weapon, and Rainbow Dash is one of those people. So they're worried about that. And also just kind of talking about, like, the fact that, like, the collapse of the Enclave as it stands, and how, like, Thunderhead is introducing dangerous new ideas into the mix, and that might be a problem.
By the way, have we completely forgotten about that, like, biological terrorism where, like, they're distributing poisoned, like, smallpox blankets full of jobberitis?
I mean, no, but, like, raiders have so long since been, like, absent from this, has so been absent from the story because they're such low-level nukes, the story just doesn't care about them anymore. And I guess that's still happening, but, like, the Volunteer Corps is kind of been, like, BJ tipped them off on that, and I don't understand how they could have done anything about that, because it's a virus that no one can really detect because of the scientific, the lack of scientific technology in the setting, and Pegasi are immune to it anyway, so why would they care? So I don't understand, like, that just hasn't resolved, but whatever.
Okay, so it is basically forgotten about. It just, like, isn't happen anymore. Just cool.
But they do talk about it in this as a bioweapon, but they don't, and they, like, there's, like, there's talk about the idea that it might be spreading to the Pegasi, which was, if you remember, super long ago, that was what Operator Lighthooves was trying to do, is he was trying to, like, find a way of making the virus susceptible to Pegasi, because he's trying to terrify them from ever going back to the ground, because he wants them to stay in the sky to protect themselves. But yeah, there's a bunch of these commanders here. All of their names start with S, so it's super hard to remember who's talking about what and what each of them stand for or anything about them. We get, just for my own purposes, we get Storm Chaser, Stargazer, Sky Striker, Stratus, and at least one other. And all of these are new characters except for Sky Striker, so it's basically impossible to remember who any of these people are. But it's a lot of just them talking about, like, coups and things they're going to do. And also, they mention about Operative Lighthooves, who apparently is, like, a super double secret agent who's so completely off the books that no internal organization within the Enclave can claim that he's, a member of their particular organization. And that Lighthooves isn't even his real name. He just is a complete ghost.
Give my life, not for honor, but for you.
Oh, man. That's stupid. There's a lot of, like, I could get into Enclave politics and why they make no sense, but the big important takeaway from a lot of this is just that the story acknowledges the fact that they're really just a dying relic of the past, that their technology is all old and busted, and they can't make new technology, so they really don't pose that much of a threat. But the only reason why this is being extrapolated upon is because of a really frustrating thing that I just want to talk about for like 2 minutes, and then I'm done. And it's something I find really frustrating with the way the story presents the Enclave. The story presents the Enclave is, like I've talked about before, where in the original story, they're way more fascist. In this, they're way more the American South. And part of the reason why that is because there's a lot of the audience that reads these stories, like a lot of like the shitty chuddy audience, like the community of this story, don't agree with the notion that the Enclave could have been defeated as easily as it was in the original story, which is bullshit for a number of reasons, but the main one just comes down to it's a dying relic. Also, the people they're fighting are experienced guerrilla warfare, and also, like, they just, like, and they had a bunch of other bullshit, like, they had a laser weapon that could just blow through the sky and shit. Like, the Enclave had no match against the surface, but, like, if you'd ask an audience member of the story, they go, Oh, the Enclave should have totally won. They had superior numbers. They held the guns and weapons that they could ever need. They held all the ships. Like, they had totally air superiority. Like, why didn't they just, like, blitzkrieg every single city and just wipe it out systematically? And it's like, because that's, it didn't work that way. The story makes it pretty clear that it didn't, like that's just your fucking headcanon. Like, you just can't accept the idea that, like, the Nazis also, would lose.
Like, yeah, also, well, discipline problems. Like, there's, like, I don't know. How could America, the United States, the most powerful superpower in known human history, with hyper advanced weapons and numbers and funding and the backing of every other great world power, possibly lose against some backwater Southeast Asian shithole like,
let's see,
what's it, Vietnam or a shithole in the mountains like Afghanistan. Like, that doesn't seem possible. Like, they could just roll those disorganized peasants.
Cue comedy music of your choice as we roll through the Wikipedia page of all of the, like, guerrilla warfare that has ever happened. Asymmetrical warfare, rather. But yeah, I didn't want to talk about that.
Particularly in the case against a, like, yeah, they have all the guns, very old guns that, like, that haven't seen a lot of active use, and a lot of troops who have been drilled in, like, prolonged peacetime against fucking Mad Max, like, desperate lunatics who have only known war.
Yes. Like, mad bastards who just do not give a fuck.
And like, and the surface is littered with Reaper freaks, like,
yes.
who are now, like, free agents, I guess, who, like, have, like, two or three insane supernatural origins apiece. Like, a cyborg ninja, get that trash out of here. Call me back when he's a cyborg ninja wizard.
Who's also a zombie. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, like, they just don't, like, I think it's because they think of it in very reductive terms of thinking of just Little Pip's crew. But even then, Little Pip's crew was full of crazy weirdos as well. Like, one of which used to work for the Enclave. But this scene really just exists for BJ to lose all her guns and her sword and shit. Because, like, you know, they get checked into the skyport and they're like, okay, we can't have you walking around with guns because we know you, Blackjack. Every time you're around the Enclave and have guns, lots of us die.
Yeah, that's fine.
They have to sneak out of the building against the commander, so Blackjack, all of the cool guns that Blackjack has, like, acquired up to this point are all gone, and also her cool space sword that can cut through anything is now gone. I would praise the idea of a certain level of disempowerment of a particularly overpowered character a little better if it wasn't for the fact that Blackjack is also a walking gun who is also an unkillable tank. Like, she's an unkillable super zombie.
Yeah, like, that's kind of, like, I was leaving it unsaid. Like, it goes
without
saying.
Yeah, I know. She is
innately, like, the, who cares? The real gun is in her heart. Like, she is an undying, like, she is an undead, like, to start with, she's an indestructible cyborg, with, yeah, a lot of deuses, like, mods, and he, like, survived, having an I-beam fired at him at the speed of sound.
Yes.
Like, so, like, their guns aren't exactly going to do anything. She's super strong. She can think bullets into existence. From their people's skulls. And then on top of that, she is also now undead, so.
Yes, she is. You took all my gun mounts. You foolishly left me my main gun, you idiots. But yeah, her and Lacuna get bamfed back out. There's a little bit of a discussion of what was going on, because she, like, she kind of gets, like, overtaken by the goddess for a while, and they have, like, a conversation a little bit about, like, the goddess is planning on exploiting the enclave's, like, weakness and trying to, like, take it over as well. And they have, like, more arguments over the fact that, like, Lacuna isn't technically a person.
I'm good. So, like, wait. So, I'm a little confused on some of the timeline here. So she's disarmed at the door to walk in and have this talk, and then
They were, like, spying on the commanders. Sorry, I think I left that part out. And then they had to sneak back out, basically.
So wait, we've just lost the space sword? Like,
yes, the space sword, the space sword, all of her cool guns, all her named guns, like Duty and Vigilance and Duty, Sacrifice, Vigilance. Her shotguns, her Uzis, the various pistols she's picked up over the course of the story, all of that's gone. She no longer has any of them.
I don't... Okay, why? I don't... So, wait, was she caught and, like, handed them over? Like, why
well, well, like, they got into the, they got into the building legitimately and had to, like, turn over all their guns and, like, okay, cool, we'll turn over all our guns. And then, like... The commander showed up, and the commanders don't like Blackjack because she's a surface terrorist in their eyes. So they basically got told, like, you gotta sneak out. And so they sneaked out, but, like, at the cost of all of her, like, cool firearms. That makes sense?
No, hand me back my guns if you want me to, like, leave here peacefully. I can do that, like, instantly and easily because of the fast travel demon over here. Who will also wreck all of your shit without any, like, material assistance? Give me back my cool sword. And I'll agree to, like, let you all live. No, it doesn't. I hate it. Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. It's an artificial attempt at disempowering the protagonist. In a way that doesn't really add anything. But yeah, Blackjack doesn't have any of her cool guns, which don't really matter because she is a living gun. And he's at 11.
I mean, the sword is the only significant loss.
Yes. Buy cool space sword.
Like, so much so that, like, it is incredibly ridiculous that she would, like, consent to leaving it behind.
I don't know. BJ has now lost one katana. They argue, yeah, her and Lacuna argue a bunch, and a lot of the argument feels directed specifically at you, Weird. To argue
so
against...
So you're walking toward me, son?
Well, like what I mean by that is, like, there's a lot of, like, conversation here that feels like it's directly addressed to a lot of complaints that you've had about Lacuna. Like, the thing I kept reinforcing about Lacuna is, like, Lacuna isn't a person, and at any moment she could just simply be disapparated into, like, vessels. And BJ even asks, like, well, wouldn't that, like, be a bad thing? Like, wouldn't that fuck over the goddess? And Lacuna basically shrugs, like, I don't know. She did it before. I guess she can just do it again whenever she wants to. Which, like, just feels like an argument we've had earlier about Lacuna. About how, like, that's stupid that it works that way. But, like, the story's like, yeah, but it works that way. She isn't a weapon. She's a victim. Lacuna doesn't get to have agency. I don't know, like I said before, there's a certain kind of charm about the idea of, like, the thing I'm specifically here for, the thing I like, is I like characters who are, like, okay, we've created a simulacrum, we've created, like, a duplicate person, and then we filled it with a bunch of, like, garbage, and it, like, forged a personality out of that is, like, very charming to me as a character, and, like, that's what I'm here for, but, like, yeah, it's kind of frustrating that you're basically told, like, well, wouldn't you become your own person and, like, wouldn't you, like, have forged your own soul by now? And she basically goes, like, no, that didn't happen. You know all that, like, goodwill you had about me as a character? Yeah, it's not real. like I'm Blackjack in this moment in that, like, I want her to be a real girl. And she's not. She never was.
So, like, the fucking memory orb magic needs, like, 3 pages... of like training montage and explaining that, like, oh no, there are consequences for doing that, And we need to, like, spend a lot of time talking about all the politics happening in a place we've never visited, among people, like, we haven't met in the story. Like, we need to, like, spend a lot of time talking about all the lore of stuff that's happening that isn't related to any of the places we've been or any of the things we've seen or done.
Yes.
But Lacuna just does, like, that's no explanation needed. You just need to be informed that it doesn't. Why isn't it more interesting? It isn't. Okay. All right, Somber.
How dare you? Like, I don't know. I still stand Lacuna. I think that it's trying to go for a thing that it's just not doing a very good job of here, of like, no, you are a real person. You just don't know it yet. And, like, you know, the whole, like, you know, oh, she really did have a soul the whole time thing. But I don't know. It just doesn't really, like...
I don't know. It's a sort of a self-indulgent aside, but...
yeah.
I want to make a self-indulgent aside is what I mean. One of the only times I've had fun at a LARP. LARPs are bad, particularly vampire LARPs, like even the best ones. Like I was at like one of the best like LARPs you could ever hope for vampire.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun playing a character tentatively, effectively named Your Friend. And the premise of Your Friend is that he's a mystery. No one knows like what precisely happened to him. Like it was a mystery that I'd set up for other players to potentially get curious about. And he's not even a person. He is a collection of brainwashed programming. I used like some of the settings and game's rules to like imply that this collection of powers was used to completely seal a personality away and create an AI made of blood magic. And the thing that I had the most fun with is people like assuming they were talking to a person where I was stubbornly playing no this like he keeps using like a series of rote phrases for everything. Like he had like in most cases an extremely limited vocabulary because I would only respond to people with like a handful of like scripted like responses, but people like glommed onto him and like became really.
That's just
invested.
What people do. That's what humans do. It's a thing we're pretty good at, actually, of like investing ourselves more than what actually is there. It's sort of a fundamental byproduct of the way we work.
Well, it was a funny tragedy to me because like part of like the premise of the character, implied and sometimes extremely specific, is that there's like a person trapped inside of the construct that you've become attached to, and potentially a really horrible person. Like a lot of people seem to assume that like whoever is inside Your Friend didn't deserve this.
Yeah. All right, we're almost
but
done.
But he was a vampire.
Yeah.
So yeah. He probably did.
We just got to like wrap up like two more scenes, basically. Okay, so BJ over here is Rampage and 21 having a conversation that barely matters. It's more Rampage sulking about not being a person, and 21 admitting that he has feelings for BJ, which is stupid, and I don't care. BJ and Dawn finally have a heart to heart because Dawn just like wanders back in the scene because she's just hanging around Chapel, I guess, and BJ like. She just goes like, oh yeah, also I know that Glory is Rainbow Dash and has been like this whole time. She's like, what, you think I'm not going to be able to figure out who my daughter is? Are you crazy? She was just kind of humoring the fact that like Glory would be like kind of embarrassed and heartbroken to be in this situation. And BJ kind of like asks a pointed question about like what the hell has Dawn been doing this whole time? Because like this is the stuff I'm here for, which is like, hey, yeah, Dawn, why did you just, like, abandon your family for, like, a decade? Like, what the fuck happened there? And she just kind of, deflects the question, and she's like, oh, I've been sort of everywhere. I've been kind of, like, she's been on some sort of, like, grand quest to sort of, like, find hope, essentially, in the wasteland. Like, she's trying to find, like, is there anywhere where we're doing okay? And the answer is, like, no, but, like, kind of like she, it's like she found little pockets that have like that have given her like hope that like if we just like all came together and settled our differences, we'd be able to figure this fucking shit out and life wouldn't be so unbearable and horrible. So, you know, Dawn's cool. I like Dawn. She's fun. She wants peace, and I can respect that.
I mean, I'm honestly kind of relieved that I think this marks the first character that you haven't been disappointed by coming back to them.
Because she's like, I'm not the worst. My arc isn't terrible. And then like the chapter ends with like Scotch finally getting her cutie mark she basically builds plumbing, like she builds proper plumbing that works for Chapel, so they now have working toilets, and Scotch finally gets her cutie mark from doing that because she found the one talent she has, and she gets the like compass and square, like the Illuminati symbol, like the Freemason symbol. She gets that.
I was having expecting a plunger.
Yes, like, that's the joke. Like, okay,
I fixed the plumbing. Oh God!
Like there is a moment where she's like, oh God, please don't tell me it's a toilet, and they're like, it's not a toilet, Scott. She's like, you're just saying that because you don't want to make fun of me. Like, here you're all laughing on the inside, and she's like, I'm gonna go cover myself in some Killing Joke to turn myself into Applejack or something. I thought, like, that's pretty funny. Like, that's all pretty right, good.
That ain't bad.
But yeah, and then they just kind of have, like, a party for her because it's just a thing that they do. And, like, BJ is, like, talking to Dealer, and she's like, man, today was, like, not awful, and no one died. That's weird. And they kind of remark about how, like, sometimes you have good days.
Why would you turn to Clippy while you're in a good mood?
I don't know. Like, I don't fucking know. Because she doesn't have any friends, I guess. Like, she has...
Except for all of her friends?
But, like, they're not, though. Like, we've made
all
this...
Right, yeah, they will betray her at the top of... They'll watch her die, because it's funny, yeah.
This chapter also ends with establishing that 21's like, oh, yeah, we're keeping secrets from you, but that's what friends do. And I'm like, no, they don't!
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Because the secret... Like, and the secret is just that she's the Rainbow... She's Twilight Sparkle's descendant. And, like, because, like, they're just talking about, like, how they rigged the, like... election process, like the determining process, the like, you know, the moment where you had to find the cup of Jesus, like moment, so that they wouldn't kidnap her, but she is just the descendant of Twilight Sparkle, and we know, like, I've already said that's the way she is, but like, yeah, she doesn't know that, and like her friends are all keeping that from her for her own protection? ? Which just seems like a shitty thing to do, and like when she calls them out on it, they go, well, you do that, and like that's not like.
Is that even true? Like, well, I don't...
She's like bailed on them before because she didn't want to like drag them into her mess. Like, she like ran off her own to go try and kill herself. She ran off her own when she like was full of cybernetics and couldn't handle her like horrible rape nightmares anymore. Like, she bails on her friends constantly because like she can't bear to bring herself in, like bring them into her problems, but. That isn't the same as lying to them. It's a false equivalency established by this shitty character, because of course this is like 21 saying this, almost said Twilight. This is 21 telling us that, like, oh yeah, friends keep secrets of each other, and it's just like, fuck off. Fuck right off with that.
It's funny that, like, not... Like, the character of Applejack was mentioned in this chapter.
Yes. You know, the beacon of honesty.
Or the like intended representation of the fact that one of the core cardinal virtues that you need to have in order to like be a friend is honest.
Yes, you need honesty. And one might make the argument that it's the most important one. It's the backbone of the entirety of a relationship with another person. But yeah, that's the end of our chapter. Do you have anything we could be reading instead of this?
Lancer. The tabletop RPG Lancer. You can get from Mastiff Press a free PDF containing almost the entire game. Lancer has a cool business model wherein, like, only one person needs to make the $25 purchase of the core PDF for an entire table to play. The only thing locked away in the paid version is a bunch of lore and GM information, stats and tools and advice and so forth for the GM. But all of the player facing info is in the free PDF. It is the single greatest mecha RPG I have ever seen in my life. And I have seen a lot of them.
I would make the argument it's the only good one. It does. I don't want to play it because it'll give me anxiety attacks, but it is the only one I've ever seen that, like, bothers to, like, not just replicate anime conventions and actually make a game that, like, humans would play, and I think that's rad. Because, like, mecha is a really cool setting to set a game in. It's just that, like, the wrong kind of people want to make material for it, in my opinion. Usually.
It doesn't bog itself down with, like, wasted crunch, like, pointless number fiddling. It's streamlined, the crunch is extremely flavorful. It does manage, like, some essential, like, anime tropes, just by virtue of how some of the rules work, especially related to overheating, overclocking your mech.
Yes.
Pushing it, going plus ultra, and melting down your own core. It's great, and it's got a pretty interesting setting, I think. Go check it out, Lancer, Master of Press, art by Abaddon of Kill 6 Billion Demons.
Yeah, so it all looks great. It's super. It's the art is what I like to describe as incredibly crunchy. It's very grit based art. You can look at that and like, yeah, I know what this would feel like in my mouth. Why did I say that?
Well, I mean, like, it's an innovative way to describe the art has a really strong sense of texture. And in some of those cases, like from the like clean, elegant would-be divine imperialists of Harrison Armory to the dirty grease monkeys of I think ISP is the name of great RPG. I love it to bits. I think I desperately want to play in it. I want to play it. If I have to run it, I will. That's my recommendation. Like, I sort of teased it last week, but here it is now. Do you have anything?
The only thing I've really been doing as of late, outside of getting, like, more dental surgery, which I'm actually finally done. Yay!
Hooray, not to worry about that so much. More teeth than ever.
Yes, I am now more teeth than man. I am 50% horse, 50% teeth. I'm Ludwig the Accursed. But the only thing I've really been doing outside of that is just been chilling on Astroneer, which is a game that's been out for a while, but I still really love it. It's still like my favorite base building sim game because it's just very chill and it's not like there's still, you know, there's a lot of management concerns and material concerns, but it's not like a super intense game. And it's also like just incredibly pretty to look at and play around. And I love its art style. It's very like round space stuff and it's just incredibly fun to just kind of wander around and get lost in. And that's just been like my last couple of days besides like working on and like art and commissions. Oh god, I'm so in the hole from all its teeth. But anyways, speaking of money, you can write to us at, you can find me at ThouArtFi. It's an incredibly not safe for work Twitter, but I usually post the link to this particular podcast every week so you can share it with your friends. You can find Weirdington at Weirdington, is it E on Twitter?
Yeah, yes. At Weirdington E.
Contact him at, or them at,
Well, it's WeirdingtonESQ at gmail.com.
Yes.
Make sure to rate us, make comments. Comment literally anything.
Yes.
Show us your love.
Yes.
Show us your devotion by sacrificing on the altar of the algorithm.
you can
anything
you can,
at all.
You can donate to Ko-Fi for Weird to so that Weird can continue to live and eat and do this podcast,
which is increasingly difficult.
I
did get one anonymous Ko-Fi recently, and I appreciate that.
Hopefully, you get
and,
more.
And a while back, I forgot to call out. Thank you, Wandering Zebra, for that one coffee.
Yeah, friend of the podcast, Wandering Zebra. They also do a great, Fall Equestria fic. I need to read their next chapter, but it's a good story. It's the only one. It's one of the only ones I really, really like and respect still. We'll be doing the Patreon thing this month. I'm gonna force Weird by Gunpoint to read the Fall Equestria tabletop, or at least one of them, the one I know of, and we're going to both die over the course of a bonus episode.
Okay. Oh no, I am not looking forward to that. Fi, this has all been a terrible mistake.
But I couldn't come home in the dark.